This morning's reading, though it physically comes from this book of readings for use in Unitarian Universalist worship, the reading itself is originally an epigraph, a quote at the beginning of a chapter in the book of poetry Revolutionary Petunias by Alice Walker. This comes from the first section of the book, which is subtitled In These Dissenting Times. She writes, "To acknowledge our ancestors means we are aware that we did not make ourselves, that the line stretches all the way back, perhaps to God or to gods. We remember them because it is an easy thing to forget that we are not the first to suffer, rebel, fight, love, and die. The grace with which we embrace life, in spite of the pain, in spite of the sorrows, is always a measure of what has gone before." A few years ago, a book came out that maybe some of you bought, or maybe even some more of you bought into, and the book is called The Life-Changing Magic of Tidying Up. Some of you are familiar with this. So the book was written by a woman named Marie Kondo, and she has what she calls the KonMari method. And here's the essence of the life-changing magic of tidying up. It's that you gather all of your possessions into one place, and you take each possession in your hand. I'll use this fine crayon as an example. You take each possession in your hand, and you see if it gives you a spark of joy. And if it doesn't give you a spark of joy, it has to hit the road. And so this is an easy way to think about our physical possessions, right? About the closets in our house full of clutter, the basements full of debris from a life well lived. But sometimes I wish that somebody would write a book about the life-changing magic of tidying up my interior closet. I mean, my exterior closet is hopeless. Anybody who's seen my office ever knows that I have not read The Life-Changing Magic of Tidying Up, and I'm a lost cause, in terms of my physical possessions, at least. But what about those interior places, where instead of old knickknacks and unused sporting goods, we've got old grudges, old fear, broken relationships, stuff weighing us down. But we can't just get rid of everything inside of us that doesn't cause us joy, I am sorry to say. Because in all of that unfortunate clutter, in all of that clutter inside of you is the story of who you are. If the only thing you were things that gave you sparks of joy, I dare say we would not be as interesting as we are. Life might be easier, but it wouldn't be as much fun. And this morning's reading from Alice Walker asks us not just to think about our own story, right? The things inside of us that have happened in our lifetime, but to think about all of the story that we stepped into. Because whether you conceive of it as starting with God or with gods or with the Big Bang or with something even beyond that, our story starts before we step into the world. And it can be hard to conceive of this sometimes because oftentimes we feel like we get a fresh slate, and like our story is different from everybody else's, and nobody fully understands us. Like this struggle is a new struggle. Like, this moment is harder than any moment that has ever been in human history. I don't know if you've felt like that at all recently. Just throwing it out there. Maybe you've felt like we might have finally found a struggle we can't overcome. But the good news is that the story isn't new. We're stepping into it with all of that clutter, with all of that junk, with all of that possibility that's in our interior closets. And so this morning, since no one has written the book yet, I had to, you know, give a sermon about it, about how to reclaim some of that life-changing magic from the clutter inside of us. From all of that old hurt, and all of the reasons to be afraid, and all of the times we've failed that make us think we're going to fail again. To recover some of the magic of our story. Some of that magic that tells us we could do something different. That for as much as we were born into a story that has been happening for generations, for thousands of years, tomorrow is not set in stone. Because that's the thing about stories, is that certainly we've stepped into one that's ongoing, but what happens tomorrow is not written yet. That's for us to write. And so rather than ignore all of the interior clutter as we seek to write a new chapter, I invite us this morning into some practices to explore our interior clutter. Three of them. And the first way for us to reach into our stories is for us to reach back. To reach back into history, whether of us as an individual or of the communities that we're a part of. Maybe there are some of you here this morning who have been told to let the past go. Right? When you bring up some old hurt, somebody looks at you and says, "Oh, can't you just let that go? Can't you just ignore that? Can't you just move on? Get over it." But what if, instead of telling each other to get over it, we asked each other, what can you learn from it? When you hold that piece of history in your hand, not looking for a spark of joy, but for a spark of insight about how to write a new chapter. I've been thinking a lot lately about a particular chapter in the history of our country. Maybe you've been thinking about this chapter too for a number of reasons. You see, I've been thinking a lot about suffragettes. I've been thinking a lot about the upcoming centennial of women's suffrage. And I've been thinking a lot about the forebears in that justice work, women like Susan B. Anthony and Carrie Chapman Catt. And I've also been thinking a lot about what Unitarian Universalist religious educator Gail Forsyth Vail calls our forebears' capacity for great insight and great oversight. Because what I've been thinking about is how women like Susan B. Anthony and Carrie Chapman Catt argued for women's suffrage in part on the ground, ought white women have the vote before black men? Ought white women have the vote before uneducated immigrants? Ought white women consolidate the white vote to fight against groups like indigenous people? And I say this not to steal a shiro of yours or to diminish their contributions to the life of our country, but to remind us that we've got some interior clutter. That our story is not all spark of joy. And in particular, this history came to my mind when, after the election, there was this amazing, incredible surge of energy on Facebook, and they said, we're going to organize the Women's March on Washington. And in the beginning, all of the primary organizers were white women. And my breath caught in my chest, and I thought, we're going to do it again. We're going to do the same thing. We might think we mean better this time, but we're going to do the same thing. I'm happy to say that I was proven wrong. That the fear I felt, right, the clutter I got caught up in, was not true. That enough folks got together and said, just because it was this way before doesn't mean we have to do the same thing again. And amazing women of color like Tamika Mallory and Carmen Perez and Linda Sarsour became primary organizers of the march. We said, just because that is the story we stepped into doesn't mean it's the next chapter. We can write something different. We can hold that history in our hand and learn from it. And so we're called to reach back into our history to recover some of the magic and the possibility in our stories. But Alice Walker isn't just calling us to reach back into history with our minds, right? To look at it as facts. She's asking us to reach deep. To reach deep into our stories. To engage it with not just our minds, but our hearts. To seek empathy with previous and forthcoming generations, not just to think about it as a fact, but as a struggle that connects us with all of humanity. Those stories that bind us together, the struggles that make us human. And speaking of the struggles that make us human, those sort of great arcs of story in history, before I went to seminary, I taught middle school. I consider it, one, not my personal experience with middle school, but middle school in general, I consider it one of the great struggles in human history. It's true. For everybody involved. And see, so I taught middle school, and oftentimes, some of the best conversations I had with the kids I taught were at the off times, right? Before the bell rang or during lunch when they were kind of hanging around and chatting and sometimes forgetting that there was an adult in the room. Heard some interesting things. And one day, a couple of students from my intermediate English to Speakers of Other Languages, or ESOL class, were in my room, and they were having a very heated discussion about a romantic tragedy currently plaguing one of them. Oh, it's just so hard to be in love. I think I might die. That's a direct quote. So, half concerned, half curious, I sort of inserted myself into the conversation and I asked her what the problem was. "Oh, Miss Roberts, it's horrible," she said. "I never see my boyfriend." "Does he live far away?" "No, he lives across the street. But he goes to a different school. I have to wait all day to see him." I think I probably rolled my eyes and said, "You'll be fine." "Oh, Miss Roberts," she moaned, "you just don't know what it feels like to be in love." I stared at her kind of with my eyebrows raised until her friend started laughing, and then she blushed because she realized that I might know what it feels like to be in love. As much as any middle schooler is loath to admit that their teacher might do things like love. But there was something to her point. Because in that moment, I was not understanding what it felt like to be 13 and in love. Sure, I knew that I could look back on my past and think about you know, I'd experienced heartbreak and I turned out okay. What was all the fuss about? My relationship with this piece of my story was all up here. I was thinking about it. Instead of engaging what it felt like, what that memory felt like, what that piece of my story felt like. So often when we engage our history, it's all about thinking, right? It's all about what actually happened and trying to analyze it with our brains rather than with our hearts. And that goes for both us as individuals and for our whole community. We recall that something similar might have happened in the past, but we fail to recall the feeling. We fail to use that opportunity to build empathy. And so, in order to get some of the magic back from our stories, in order to cut through some of the clutter and figure out how to write a new chapter, I invite us to look back on our stories, not just with our heads, but with our hearts, to see how we might learn empathy from what has gone before, rather than just lessons. And so once we've reached back into our history and learned how we can do something different, and we have reached deep into our own stories as groups and as individuals, and we've said, you know, I can use this to build empathy. I can do more than recall a fact. I can recall a feeling. I can recall what it's like to be human in all of its heartbreak and exhilaration. And when we've done that, it's preparing us for the third way to engage our story, which is to reach out. Because ultimately, that's what that clutter does. The clutter keeps us from reaching out. That time we failed before, that time somebody told us we couldn't do it, that time that someone told us we weren't enough, all of that adds up to a hesitancy to do something new, to reach beyond our comfort. I love the way Alice Walker describes it. She says, the grace with which we embrace life in all of its pain and all of its sorrow. And there's lots of ways to sort of reach out, to reach out into a new chapter. It can be as simple as picking up the phone or the keyboard and getting in touch with a relationship that has fallen to the side, an old friend, a family member. It can be as global and as expansive as working on your own internal biases as you reach out to unfamiliar communities in the work of justice. It can be small and it can be big, but in all of the ways that we reach out, we make ourselves more able to write a new chapter. And sometimes, reaching out happens in really unexpected ways and places. When I was in seminary, I had to take an arts class in order to fulfill a graduation requirement. And there were lots of offerings. You could take a class where you looked at old buildings, and you could take one where you did painting or where you did stained glass. One semester, there was even jewelry making for prayer beads. There was screen printing. And all of those classes had lab fees. So I took liturgical dance instead. Right? For those, if that's an unfamiliar term, liturgical dance is a broad umbrella for dance that's used in worship. I went to a United Methodist seminary, and so I learned sort of a Methodist approach, but it translates fairly well. And you see, like you did, my classmates all laughed when I told them that I would be taking liturgical dance that semester. They thought it would be ridiculous because I did not present myself as the kind of person who did things like dance. Indeed, I had not taken a dance class since elementary school when I had been forced to learn square dancing in my gym class. It's a useful life skill, but I didn't really see that at the time. And on the first day of class, I was so nervous. I was nervous like I hadn't been in ages. Being a teacher had sort of like shocked all of the public speaking nerves out of me. But man, I had some nerves on the first day of that class. You see, in college classes these days, there's usually all kinds of barriers between you and all of the people you're in class with. There's a table you sit behind. There's your laptop with the screen up. There's some books strewn out. There's a lectern in front of the professor. There's all of these barriers between you and the other people. And when I got to class on that first morning, all of the tables and all of the chairs were pushed to the side. The middle of the room was a big, empty circle. Nobody really knew what to do, where to sit. We all were kind of self-conscious in our varying states of workout clothes. You could tell who went to the gym more regularly based on who had like nicer, newer workout clothes. And there were clearly some of us who had had to dig to the bottom of a drawer to find something that we could dance in. And man, I was so afraid. I was afraid that I was going to fall, that I was going to look stupid, that I wouldn't be able to do it, that I was going to have to spend a lot of time looking somebody in the eye, that I was going to have to hold somebody's hand, that I might have to touch another part of somebody other than their hand. Everything that makes me feel safe was gone. We were all just there. And in that moment, in those moments in that class, something incredible happened. When you took away the barriers that we usually had between us, we built amazing connection. I felt more connected to the people in my dance class than I did to anybody else from any of my other classes and seminary. And sure, we looked awful stupid sometimes. We fell and rolled around on the floor. We sweat. We laughed. We cried. And we saw one another in a vulnerable state that we didn't really show to other people that we knew. When we put aside the barriers, both the external ones, like a table between us, and the interior ones, like our fear of looking stupid, or of not knowing, or of messing it up, or of not being good enough, when we take those barriers out of the way and reach out to one another, amazing things happen. New chapters get written. Something different. A new story. We cannot rewrite our pasts to make them nothing but joy. We cannot look inside of our family history or of the history of a community and get rid of all of the things that are scary or hurtful. We cannot get rid of stories of loss. We cannot undo struggle or death. But what we can do is move forward. We have the capacity to write a new chapter for ourselves, for our families, for our world. We have the capacity to declutter and reach out, to set aside fear, not to set aside struggle, because I am sorry to say we will never set aside struggle, but to set aside fear and reach out. And so my hope and my prayer for this church community and for each of you and for all of us is that we might find a way to know our own stories, to reach back into our history and to reach deep into our heart, and in doing so, find a way to move past our fear and reach out. And in doing so, make a better world. May it be so. Amen.